you.
Oh my god, I'm so pissed off at that.
Fourth pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the New York Jets select Sauce Gardner, defensive back, Cincinnati. 10th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the New York Jets select Garrett Wilson, wide receiver, Ohio State. With the 26th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the New York Jets select Jermaine Johnson, linebacker, Florida State.
Yo, what's happening, everybody? What's happening? What's up? What's up? Welcome to episode number 60 of the Flight Deck Podcast. As always, it's your boy TK, joined by Mr. Omari Brown and Mr. Matthew Freeze. Post-draft thoughts, fellas. What's up?
What's up? I mean, listen, the energy is high. the energy is high. The good feels are high. Listen, I feel like there's no reason. If you're a Jets fan right now, you're on cloud nine. Everybody's feeling good.
What's going on? Post-draft feels, everyone's feeling good. I think Jets fans are in a little bit of a weird position right now, getting universal praise across the board from every media outlet known to man. So plenty to digest and excited to get into it.
Oh, yeah. Now, before we get into this fire-ass draft that Joe Douglas gave us. Matter of fact, shout out to Joe Douglas. Shout out to Big Joe. But listen, before we get off into this draft, let's do a little around the league, talk a little bit about other people in the draft or other picks. You know, matter of fact, I'm gonna start y'all off with this question. Out of all the non-Jets picks, who was your favorite pick? I'm going to start with you, Amari.
Okay, so my favorite pick, there were a lot. And this team, this is the team that I always say if the Jets piss me off to the point where I'm no longer a Jets fan, I would always be a fan of this team. But I just think that the Baltimore Ravens, year in, year out, they have a mission statement as an organization. We're going to find good football players. We're going to find tough football players. And it just never seems to fail. And you guys can jump in. I feel like the Ravens, like when they pick players, we're like, yeah, that makes sense. That's a Raven. And hopefully, I feel like hopefully that's where the Jets can be in a couple of years. But David Ojabo at 45. Now, granted, big injury concern, and it's a serious injury with an Achilles. And Achilles injuries, you know, they're tough to begin with, but Achilles injuries for edge rushers with elite bursts like David Ojabo, you know, it's, you know, we'll see how he comes back. But you get a top 15 pick. Some people had him as a 20. I would have had him as edge number 3. You get him at 45. You don't have to rush him to start. I know they have Tyus Bowser, and they have a lot of guys in that room, to where they don't really need David Ojabo to start. So I think that the Ravens, if you tell me in 2 years that David Ojabo is getting double-digit sacks, rushing off the edge for the Ravens, I would not be surprised at all. And the Ravens got him at pick 45. So that's my favorite pick. You guys know I love edge rushers, and I just think David Ojabo, if he comes back fully healthy, David Ojabo is the top 15 pick that you were able to get at 45. So I just love that pick. And I love everything that they've done in the draft.
I really wanted him. Not gonna lie. But what about you, Matt? Who you got?
All right. So, I mean, I was going to make the joke about Cole Strange and be like, damn, that was a great pick. But we all saw, I'm sure, the video of the Rams front office guys. Was it Les Snead and McVay making a joke about how they were scouting him for the fourth round and somehow he went, what, 29th overall? So that was pretty funny. But I think my favorite pick is by the team that made the first pick in the draft, but it wasn't the first pick. So I got Devin Lloyd going to the Jags. I mean, they traded Miles Jack this year over – or did they trade him or release him? I know he went to the Steelers. But, you know, I just think that's such a value pick. When a guy like that slides as far as he did, it's just like – I mean, we were praising him because we really think that, you know, he can be easily, I think, a 100 tackle guy, and they just kind of replaced – you know, Miles Jack, who had a lot of hype coming in. He was a top of the second round pick a couple of years ago. and they replace him with an infinitely more, you know, athletic and just an overall better player. Not to mention, Devin Lloyd also has pass rush ability. So not only did they get Trayvon Walker, who, you know, we're not huge fans of, but, you know, he is going to be a pass rusher for them, and they have Josh Allen, but now they have another guy who's going to play linebacker but has pass rush ability. So I just think Devin Lloyd was probably one of the best value picks, you know, aside from, I would say, Kyle Hamilton in the first round. So, you know, bad job by the Jags at the beginning, you know, the top of the draft, in my opinion. Great job by the Jags of identifying a player that fell, because I think ultimately it came down to the fact that once that run on, you know, the tackles and the wide receivers happened in the first round, there was so much talent getting pushed down the board, and Devin Lloyd was just an unfortunate casualty of that. And to get him at pick, what, 27 is just, I mean, that's beyond value. So that was probably my favorite pick in the first round.
That's my defensive rookie of the year. I'm just calling that out too. Right now. So last year I picked Micah Parsons. This year I'm picking Devin Lloyd because I just think, just like Matt said, I think Matt and I think the world of him. I think TK as well too. I wouldn't be surprised. Would you guys be surprised if Devin Lloyd has 120 tackles, 7 sacks, and 3 or 4 interceptions?
Absolutely not.
No.
I wouldn't either. And we think Jacksonville might be playing from behind a lot of those times too. So I'm just, you know, for whatever you want to say about Trayvon Walker, they salvaged that first round with that pick.
Yeah. I agree. Now, for me, my favorite non-Jets pick had to be Christian Watson to Green Bay. You know, we did the wide receiver breakdown, and, you know, he was somebody we both was high on with his skill set, ability to play inside, outside, all of that. Finally, the Packers stopped the bleeding. Like, I was surprised they didn't make a move to get somebody early in the first round with those two first round picks they had, and they went defense back to back. Considering they lost the best wide receiver in the league in Davante Adams, they lost MVS, they lost Equanimeous St. Brown. Like, they lost everybody, and their wide receiver one was Alan Lazard, so it shocked me that they didn't go for somebody early. But, you know, to still land Christian Watson at number 34 was good for them. And for him, he can still keep the same color scheme. You brought that up a little earlier, Omari. So he still got the same color scheme. So, I think he's coming in to start right away. There's nobody else that's going to beat him out in Green Bay. So he could, you know, threaten rookie of the year, because of the sheer amount of volume that he'll get, and he is with a Hall of Fame quarterback. So that was my favorite pick.
I was honestly with Christian Watson, I was kind of shocked, because I think you could have validated that pick in the first round. You know what I mean? Like, I think they could have taken him in the first round and no one would have bat an eye. Same thing with, you know, George Pickens. I mean, the value that the Steelers got at 52 with Pickens was insane, because we all agree that Watson and Pickens could have easily been first round picks. So the fact that I think it's unheralded kind of what Green Bay did. I mean, they got Quay Walker, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of him, but, you know, I see why they would pick him, because I think they still got Devondre Campbell. And then they got Deontay Wyatt, who, you know, fills a role. I mean, they have some pretty good, you know, interior defensive linemen, but, you know, I could see it. But we would have never batted an eye if Christian Watson went in the first round. So the fact that they got him where they did is supreme value, in my opinion.
Right. And see, I was thinking they would double up. Go 28 and 34.
And they could have got Pickens and Watson.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Listen, I know that everybody's hyped up on these Georgia players and Devontae Wyatt. Quay Walker, when y'all watched that film, did y'all think that he was a first rounder? Now, granted, and I say this, and, you know, this is just a disclaimer, and just so people know, like, when we say these things, we want these guys to get paid. I'm super happy that Quay Walker was picked as a first round. He's a really good player. He's not a first round linebacker. I mean, yes, he's fast. He can cover a little bit, but he's going to be taking on blockers. He's going to be taking on guards a lot. And I just didn't see enough punch and enough thump to warrant him being a first round linebacker, especially going before Devin Lloyd. If you're going to take a linebacker, take somebody like Devin Lloyd. Devontae Wyatt is a nice piece. You could have got somebody like Travis Jones. I know Travis Jones is more of a three technique, more of a two gap upfield type of system, but you can find five techniques. You need. And I know the Packers get bullied sometimes, so I guess that they want to kind of establish that identity and, you know, just be more physical. I just think they could have did that with a different linebacker. I don't like the Quay Walker pick at all. You could have, just like you guys said, Christian Watson would have been perfectly fine to for that pick. Where did Quay Walker go? 22? Yeah, so Quay Walker went 22. I would have been perfectly fine taking Christian Watson at 22, or they should have been more aggressive and traded up for a Treylon Burks. They could have went Watson. They could have went Pickens after that. They could have went Sky Moore. So now I just feel like there's always an excuse for Aaron Rodgers or something like that. It's so, just like, it's – go ahead.
I'm sorry. My only to your point, they could have moved up for that. That run on wide receivers was exactly where we thought it was, which is why we're going to give Joe Douglas like some props there, because he got Absolutely. Ahead of it. Absolutely. Right, he got ahead of it. But
you could arguably say that he started the run, right? After London
went, and then he was crossing his fingers when nine, and then he got his wide receiver one. So, you know, we'll get into that. But my last point about the Packers is, didn't they have two first round picks? Right, they had two. You couldn't just got AJ Brown.
Exactly, and that's enough. But they don't want to pay anybody. But that's my whole thing. And they gave Rodgers all that money. Yeah, so
they had 22 and 28.
Walker was 22 and 28. Come on, you could have packaged that up and went. And listen, they could have packaged that up and went and got Debo. They could have did something like that. Gave Debo just a little Band-Aid extension, 2 years for $50 million or something like that.
What's crazy?
I just think Aaron Rodgers is 37. Like, what are you waiting for? You got rid of Za'Darius Smith. Nobody's really making money besides Bakhtiari, Aaron Jones, and Rodgers. Am I correct?
Yep.
Pretty on defense, much. Who are they?
Kenny Clark, and Jair is due for a contract, I think.
He's due. They haven't given him his money yet. So who exactly are you paying? And I mean, we just look at these teams right now. I think that they're relying on beating up on those NFC North teams.
That all got better, mind you. Like, significantly.
I love what the Lions did.
Yeah.
So
right.
I mean, we'll see. But I just don't understand Green Bay. Devontae Wyatt is a good player. I think that Devontae Wyatt is kind of slept on out of that whole trio, but it's one of those situations where a lot of those guys, you remember when some of those Miami players would get picked early on in those Miami days? You got guys like Kelly Jennings and anybody who came out of Miami, they were just automatically a first-round pick.
Yeah.
I think this is one of those situations. I just think they could have did – I don't know. I just feel like you could have did much better, because even if it's not a tier one receiver, Aaron Rodgers makes those guys better.
Yep.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just felt like George Pickens and Christian Watson or Sky Moore or any of the other guys that we love would have just been tremendous picks.
Well, you know, Green Bay on Green Bay. We saw that last year. But yeah. enough about.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's hop into the fantastic draft that Mr. Joe Douglas pulled off for the New York Jets. So what we're going to do, we're just going to talk about them in the order that they were picked, starting with Mr. Sauce Gardner, number four. Now, for those of you who watched, you know, we was going live for the draft, like all of us felt some type of way about seeing Sauce at four, considering that we all thought KT would be the pick or should be the pick. And you know, to see him get passed for Gardner, you know, really, really struck a nerve, man. But, you know, looking back, moving forward, I'm good with what happened. Let me ask y'all this. What's the one thing or whatever, two things, whatever, that you like best about Sauce? At four.
I love that he was arguably the best player in the draft, depending on who you speak to. And I love that they filled a need with I love Sauce's length, pause, and then I like the way he uses his hands. I think he's going to have to get coached up a little bit because the rules are different, and I think that he might have a lot of defensive holding early on in his career because he is a little handsy. I love the way he comes up and tackles. Now, granted, if you were watching a live stream, you're probably gonna be like, you were upset at the pick. I wasn't upset at the player. I was upset because I felt like there were only two picks, and I didn't know that Joe Douglas was going to trade back into the first round. So I definitely thought that this team needed a premier edge rusher more than they needed another corner. But now you look at this team. Coming into this offseason, we penciled in Bryce Hall and Brandon Nichols. They've now been replaced with Ahmad Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed. So you got one shutdown corner, hopefully, and you have one guy that competes his ass off and understands zone concepts and isn't a liability. And, oh, guess what? A lot of the large runs that the Jets gave up last year on the defense was because of poor cornerback play and run support. Hopefully that's not an issue anymore. So the Jets got better. They got better in the locker room. They got better on the field. And they got better defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite part of Sauce at four, honestly, is first of all, you kind of touched on it. He's a willing tackler. Like, he might not be the best tackler, but he comes up and he steps up and puts his nose up there. I mean, even on like little bubble screens, stuff like that, he sniffs those out and he makes a run at the guy, regardless of if he's going to make the tackle. And honestly, he holds guys up long enough that support can come and take on the rest of the tackle. So I think that's probably an unheralded part of his game, is that he is a willing tackler and he's going to put his nose in there. And honestly, you know, all he's got to do is learn the peanut punch, and then we're getting fumbles and stuff like that. I know easier said than done, but, you know, I could be hopeful because I think he's already a complete player for the most part. I think that you can make the argument that he is the most complete player in the draft. Him and probably Aiden, I would say, would be probably two of the most complete guys that, you know, maybe their floors are a little higher and their ceilings might not be as high, but they're already at a point where they can be put into a system and have success from day one. Now, you touched on the handsiness a little bit, and I'm sure he'll get, you know, flagged for a couple of those calls, but when you watch the video of how he plays, when you watch the All-22 tape, that footwork is just – it's insane. Whether he's in press man, in zone coverage, whatever it is, first of all, his ability to keep his head on a swivel and look in the backfield and look at the quarterback's eyes while also simultaneously covering his man is insane to me. Because I forgot what game I was watching. I think after the draft, I just started watching tape like all over again for whatever reason, because I'm a lunatic. And I've just never seen someone who has their head on a swivel like that, but also their footwork is in line with their eyes so well, that they're watching the receiver while their feet are moving, while also watching the quarterback. It's insane to me. And honestly, I know what Bryce Hall had all of, I think, what, one pick last year? I think our secondary is all at four picks, which is just.
Yeah, I'm not unheard. Even sure if Bryce had a pick. I know Echols had two.
Okay, yeah, Echols had the pick six against Tua and mm-hmm. another pick, I think. And then yeah,
against Brady.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pick against Tampa. So it's a couple things here. I went back and did some research because – you know what I really do love before we get into all this? There were smoke screens everywhere, Matt. You were right. And you know, people were puffing on smoke and all that. So in my mind, when that got picked, I'm thinking, okay, you build the team from the inside out. You build from the front to the back. So that's why I was thinking that there was going to be an edge rusher. And plus, with the amount of cover three that this team plays, that I didn't think that Sauce was going to be an ideal pick. But going back, he does have good zone recognition. And I also saw a stat that the Jets played the most cover one last year. So, and on third and short and third down situations, Robert Saleh was playing man. So we know that Sauce can cover guys in man to man. So that's going to be that's going to be another added value, being able to neutralize those number one receivers and then allowing the pressure to get there. How many times did it was third and 12 and we were still sweating? Like, third and 12, we shouldn't be sweating. Third and 12, it should be like, all right, we're about to get off the field. I hope the offense has their first two or three plays ready to go. So I think that this is just going to get – this is going to give Jeff Obert more confidence. This is going to give Quentin Williams more confidence. This is going to give Jermaine Johnson, Carl Lawson, and JFM more confidence. I think players like Sauce and then some of the other guys that we're going to get into next, I think they do – it's more – their impact is going to be felt in the building. And this is just going to go – it's going to be bigger than – just, you know, putting a guy here and there and we're plugging in some positions. I think that guys like these are difference makers from in almost every facet.
Yeah. So, you know, after thinking about everything, like, It was a good pick, man. If you look at what the Jets did last year, we had allowed the third worst completion rate, 68%. What got me was throughout the season, we gave up 73 plays of 20 yards or more. That put us next to last. And then what we have, three interceptions?
I think it was like four or something, really, because Echols had two.
Ashton had one, I believe, and Echols had two, you know, the pick six against Tua.
Maybe, and I think Shaq Lawson had the other one, right?
Yeah. Yep. Oh, was that Lawson?
Shaq Lawson. Yeah, remember he got that against the Bengals, yeah.
I thought it was JFM against the Texans.
So five. JFM had one against the Texans. Lawson had one against the Bengals, two against Miami, and one against Tampa.
Either way, we was terrible. But
it was bad.
Like, we needed help on that back end. We needed help up front. But again, after looking at what we were, this is a good pick, man. And I think having him will give Ulbrich and Salah a lot to work with. You know, we tried to experiment with Hall and Echols and all them last year, and they got valuable reps. And that will give us some high quality depth pieces as well. And you know, Salah in San Francisco, he had multiple DBs playing all over the field. This might result in Michael Carter, who we all think would be a hell of a safety, actually playing safety. So it's a lot to like about this pick, man, and one I'm really glad about. So shout out to Sauce.
Yeah, and we've already mentioned that with the way these NFL, you know, the NFL is a copycat league. Everyone loves to say that. But when you start looking about it, a lot of teams have three number ones. You look at the Bengals, what they did, they have three really good receivers. The Bills have three really good receivers. The Miami Dolphins, they have some decent receivers. Even the Patriots, I don't really like the Patriots receiving group, but there's three viable options with Kendrick Bourne, Aguilar, and now Devontae Parker. So DB rooms are going to start being five deep at cornerback, because usually your nickels can't really cover those big guys in the slot. So Bryce Hall is going to get some snaps. Brandon Echols is going to get some snaps. And we already think, I think Michael Carter is, I think that his comp is Buda Baker. So, and you guys already know how we all feel about Buda. So yeah. I think that you're going to need three or four like DBs, and then you're going to need three safeties. That's just going to be the norm for these NFL teams. And it's just going to be good to not have to double guys and not have to generate pressure. I think now finally Robert Saleh is going to be able to, you know, get after the QB with just those four down linemen and or maybe a fifth guy that they'll bring somewhere. And I think that, you know, guys like Sauce, they just make your life easier.
And I think you could see the vision. Like, the last thing I'll say is I think you could see the vision, because they literally just replaced both their starting cornerbacks from last year with two new starting cornerbacks this year. So the guys that, like you said, got those valuable reps last year, I mean, yeah, they kind of got displaced because of DJ Reed and Sauce, but that doesn't mean they don't have a role on this team. I mean, if anything, that just instills more confidence in Ulbrich to feel comfortable with throwing out all those guys, putting Echols in there, putting Hall in there, you know, Echols in if Hall goes down, or Michael Carter in, you know, in a multitude of positions. So I think the back end is just so much better today just by the addition of Reed and Sauce than it was at the end of last year. So it's just amazing. And you can see what Joe Douglas was trying to do. And I'm glad, just, you know, one more point, that they kind of deviated from, you know, what Joe and Salah were saying in their interviews. That, I mean, from the beginning, it was a smokescreen, right? I mean, we're going to have a fist fight about building through the trenches, and then they go out and they pick a corner with the fourth pick. And then what do they do with the 10th pick? We'll get into it, but, you know, it's just crazy.
So, since he brought it up, let's go to number 10. So, at 10 pick, they got Garrett Wilson. And, again, it wasn't about the player for me. It was the fact that, okay, we had KT. We didn't take him. He went to the Giants, which we all hated. And I'm not even, you know, from New York, and I hated that for, you know. But we get to the 10, and, you know, I was pounding the table. Like, we got my guy, Jermaine Johnson, at 10. and they called out Gary Wilson. And, you know, man, my heart just sank, man. So, anyways, looking back on it, and it's easy. You know, hindsight's always 20/20, man. And you look back at this pick, it was a good pick. And what's crazy about it is I had him as number 10 in my own personal mock, but that was after taking KT at 4, you know. But when that didn't happen, I automatically shifted to Jermaine, and he came along at 10. And I was a little disappointed, but it was still a good pick, man. And I'm not really mad at it. There's a lot to like about this kid, man. He's fast. He was highly productive. And some people may think he was productive because of where he was at. And, you know, he had Chris Olave there with him, and he had, you know, nice run game. And it is Ohio State, but you look at him, him and Elijah Moore kind of similar. They both crazy with the route running. I know Gary Wilson ain't Debo, but he can be Debo-esque, put in the right position. So I was happy with the pick. Once again, Joe did his thing, and we're going to see how I go.
Yeah. It was easy to question the pick at first glance, and I think we all did because, you know, we were ranked last in defense. I mean, across the board. When you go out there and your defense ain't producing, your defense ain't doing anything, you can't get off the field, you know, the whole nine, it's just like, it's easy to be like, why are you taking a wide receiver at 10 when your defense has been statistically the worst and you took a corner at 4? So it's easy for us to be critical of the pick, but, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I mean, if we all had known what was going to transpire the next, you know, 16 picks later, we all wouldn't have bat an eye. We would have said, oh, damn, we got one of the guys who was considered the best wide receiver in the draft. But I think the biggest point, and we brought this up earlier, was the run on wide receivers went right after we picked. Like, right after we picked. So if Joe Douglas doesn't make this pick, you could be looking at a situation where we all agreed that we did need to get a wide receiver high in the draft. We were hoping for Pickens and Watson, who would have been there at our pick, right? But we were all hoping for it, that we can get one of them at the top end. One of those guys was going to fall, and we were going to get him at the top end. And it did work out that way, granted. But you can't be mad at Joe Douglas for getting ahead of the run on wide receivers and getting who he felt was a top 8 prospect. So, I mean, I got nothing to be critical of. When you can drastically upgrade your secondary group with one pick, with Sauce at 4, and then drastically improve your wide receiver group, that should be improved not only because of this pick, but also because Elijah Moore hopefully stays healthy and Corey Davis stays healthy, and you added 2 tight ends and a third one in the draft, it's like, it's a home run. It's just, you know, I mean, there was a time last year when we were so adverse to taking wide receivers in the first round, and here we are talking about taking arguably the best wide receiver in the draft in the first round at pick 10. So I don't think you could be mad at this pick. Obviously, the initial reaction, we were kind of a little upset because we thought it was going to be, if it's not, you know, wide receiver, or I'm sorry, if it wasn't edge of 4, it's got to be edge of 10. Jermaine sitting there, but listen, man, I'm not mad about it. You gave Zach another weapon, and there's nothing to be mad about now.
This is crazy because I'm not used to having a GM. This is Joe Douglas's third draft. Honestly, this is his second draft. That first draft, he didn't even have his own guys in. People need to stop harping on that. And after this, now seeing 2 years of, you know, credible drafting and knowledgeable drafting and learning and seeing how he maneuvers the board, I think the big reason that we were kind of upset or kind of we were questioning it, because the drop off from tier 1 to tier 2 in the wide receivers wasn't as big as the drop off between tier 1 and tier 2 for the edge rushers. We can all agree, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So I think I'm not gonna speak for you. That's what kind of made me upset. And I'm like, what are we doing? But the Jets haven't drafted a first round wide receiver since Santana Moss. So I don't even know how old that was. I think I was like 10 years old, and I remember that. So it's been a long time. It's been a long time. What Joe Douglas did say that wasn't a smokescreen leading up to the draft is that he wanted to draft freaks. 6'3", 190-pound corner with hips like a slot corner, that's a freak. Six foot receiver that he's great at this. He's great at football, and football is his second best sport. It's kind of freaky to me. He's a pretty good route runner. The thing about Garrett Wilson is that I didn't like. I liked him. You guys know he was in my top 5, but I didn't think that he had an elite trait. I think his elite trait is that he's just a phenomenal athlete, which plays. He's a good route runner. He has strong hands, and he goes up and he gets contested balls. So I'm not mad at the team for getting, you know, their number one corner and their number one receiver. Because again, what have we been saying since the end of last year?
We don't got talent.
Exactly, that too. And we always say that. But this is about developing Zach Wilson. Garrett Wilson helps Zach Wilson. So I'm not gonna be mad at an explosive player, because guess what? They just need players that can score from anywhere on the field. Before this draft, we could say that they only had one. I think Elijah Moore is the only guy that can score, and conventionally can score from anywhere on the field. Now the Jets have, you know, we'll get to these guys. The Jets leave this draft with three now. Now there's three. So you can't argue with that. And also, did you guys hear that, and this is just unbelievable, and I feel like the Jets have just, like, everything is in sync finally for the first time that I can remember. Robert Saleh had each of his positional coaches go to Joe Douglas and the scouts and say, this is exactly what I need for our system to succeed. This is what I need in a running back. This is what I need in linemen. This is what I need in skill position players. And they did the same thing. Oberg did the same thing. And it's actually pretty remarkable how these players fit exactly what the Jets are doing. Now, hopefully we're going to start to see players where it's going to help us, and it's going to help us put out better content, because now when we watch film and when we watch highlights, we're going to be like, oh yeah, he fits with what LaFleur likes to do. Oh yeah, this guy is a Robert Saleh guy. This is an Oberg guy. So I think you can tell how the organization is like they're working in conjunction with each other, and it's really good to see.
Yeah, and it was so nice. It was so nice that we kind of, I guess we did it thrice, if that's how you say three times, because we ended up getting the guy that fit Oberg's defense again with the third first round pick that we traded back into by getting his boy Jermaine. So
at 26. At 26.
And I'm sure you saw this too. Is I think we discussed it as we were watching, if not, you know, after the fact. So I actually was watching, I think Joe Douglas's I think it was an interview, I forgot who it was. Apparently, right after that 10th pick, Saleh went up to Douglas and started nudging him a little bit. It was like, hey, listen, if Jermaine gets to this point, we're gonna have to entertain the idea of trading up. And I vividly remember, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything like that, but I vividly remember saying that if Jermaine starts to drop, they got to entertain the idea. You have to entertain the idea of trading up, and you can't just, if he's your guy and if Garrett Wilson wasn't going to be there and that was going to be your pick at 10 and he's fallen and he's fallen and he's fallen, you got to entertain the idea of doing it. And what do they go out and do? They go out and do it. So, I mean, Ulbrich, this is the guy that I think we all kind of knew at the Senior Bowl that he was going to be one of their favorites, because he's an edge rusher, highly productive. I mean, he played at an SEC school at Georgia for what, 2 years, and then transferred to FSU and won the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. But I mean, honestly, it's just it's crazy to me that you get three guys in your top eight in the first round. So it's just, to me, it's like, this is just another guy that I'm sure Ulbrich and Saleh were like, this is the guy we need for our system. And when you look at it, he can play stand up. He could put his hand, you know, in the dirt, and he has plenty of pass rush moves. It's just about getting it to the, you know, learning to chain them together. I think that's really his biggest deficiency right now, is what happens when he gets stopped on that first move. After that, he's an elite run defender. He has this great strong arm, great moves, and he can get to the QB. It's just, coach him up a little bit. The same way Sauce needs to cut back on the, will probably need to cut back on the holding penalties and be coached up, is the same way you got to teach Jermaine. And he has all the traits. All you got to do is coach him up. And maybe I'm a little bit higher on him now because he's a Jet, but listen, man, when your GM has the savvy to identify a player that they want, that's sliding down the draft board, the same as, I guess, I don't want to call Trent Baalke a good GM, but you know, sometimes you luck into a player like Devin Lloyd.
He's running football.
But you know, at the end of the day, when you have a GM that has now done it 2 years in a row, you can kind of have confidence that maybe you don't have to question what he's doing so much. So I was just impressed with how he maneuvered up the board to get another guy that was top eight on his, you know, on their personal board.
Let me just hop in and say this real quick. You talking about Gary Wilson and us drafting the wide receiver. Santana Moss was the last one, 2001. And you said you was like 10, so way to make me feel old as dirt.
I was six.
I, Hey, yeah, I appreciate well, that. Y'all.
isn't that crazy though? All these wide receiver drafts, and it's just been we've drafted so many. I don't even want to go back there, but we've drafted so many five techniques that is just out of control. So you know, and it's even crazy because some people are getting mad that the Jets didn't draft a D tackle or a safety. I was like, I think we've drafted those positions enough. We could find those guys in undrafted free agents. You know, like I'm not going to demean those positions, you know, altogether, but I mean, come on. But the Jermaine Johnson pick, I like the Jermaine. Some people are higher on Jermaine Johnson than I am. And just because I'm not high on him doesn't mean that I'm not a huge fan. I think that he has an incredibly high floor. If nothing, he's going to be like a really good base end. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think Jermaine Johnson is going to play for 10 years. He's going to be, I think he's going to give you somewhere in between. I'm trying to think who's a base end that I can kind of like him to.
I was taking Gakwe numbers.
Yeah, but he's not.
He doesn't have the speed.
I'm just saying those type of numbers.
Those type of numbers. I see Jermaine Johnson as like a really, maybe a more explosive Ryan Kerrigan, maybe. Just because, you know, he'll give you double digits here and there, but I think he's just going to be a really good football player, and you're going to get a lot. You're going to get a lot of good football out of Jermaine Johnson. He's not going to be a liability in the run game. I know people were getting crazy because JFM is probably going to start off on early downs as a DN. This is what good teams do, guys. I know that we're not used to this, and we're not used to developing players and bringing them along slowly, but this is how it's done. When guys are transitioning to a higher level of play, you let them get their feet wet. That's why you have veterans in your system already and they know what to do. And then you want to give these guys, you want to feed them a little bit more as they get more comfortable with the game. So Jermaine Johnson will come in. Your main objective, get to the QB. It's third and long. It's third and eight, clear passing situation. Get to the QB. That's all. And then we'll start to put a little bit more on your plate early on. Jermaine Johnson is going to start off as a situational pass rusher. By the end of the season, he's going to be there. Starting base end, he'll probably be playing the weak side to start things off, and it's going to be good. He doesn't have to come in and be their number one edge rusher because that's going to be Carl Lawson right there. He gave that guy too much chest on that play. But I think that Jermaine Johnson is going to be a solid pick. I think people need to slow down with the, you know, he's going to have 15 sacks and all this. I think you're going to set yourself up for failure. But Jermaine Johnson is going to be, I think he's going to be a solid player for a long time. I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, Deshaun Ellis, you know, just a steady guy. Yeah. He may not wow you, but he's going to be productive and he's going to be a good locker room guy. I love the way, even though he wasn't the highest pick, you can tell Jermaine Johnson is going to be a leader. In year two, he's going to be the guy in the huddle. He's going to be rallying guys together. And I just love that they got three guys that football is really important to them.
So, interestingly enough, NFL.com has his NFL comp right now as Max Crosby. So if he's Max Crosby, super steal at 26.
Max Crosby wasn't Max Crosby until he got to the NFL. And, you know, a D-line coach got their hands on him. But, I'm just saying
if that's
his comp. Yeah, listen, somewhere between Max Crosby and Ryan Kerrigan, I think we'd all sign up for that. But Damian Berkowitz, I also thought it was a mistake passing on an edge. Who do you think we end up with at the position if JJ didn't fall?
Karlaftis
or Ojabo?
I'm going to say Karlaftis or Ebiketie.
That was going to be my second.
Ebiketie. I think Ebiketie was going to be the guy in the second round, but I'm glad that they moved up for Johnson. And honestly, the way we thought it was going to go, we were all expecting a trade up, but we were expecting either Thibodeau and a receiver or Thibodeau. And maybe we were thinking another lineman too. Some of us, I know I was thinking another lineman, but I was fully expecting them to trade back, give up both of those seconds and come back up for a receiver.
Yeah.
I would have been fine, and you guys let me know. Would you guys have been okay with Thibodeau at 4 and Stingley at 10? Because that's what I thought it was going to
That's what I thought for the longest time it was potential, and I would have been ecstatic with that.
Yeah, and then trade back up for Treylon Burks because I thought Burks was going to go 15 to 20, and I thought that's a prime spot to trade back up. So I love the way that this worked out, and I think that the name of this should just be the tides are turning because getting Elijah Vera Tucker, getting Michael Carter – Elijah Moore falling, like that, I think that you're really starting to see. And now that Jermaine Johnson, I think that this is the main one where we can start to see the tide turning, because, you know, for all the shit that I talked about Trayvon going number one, if Aiden goes number one, Detroit takes Sauce.
Yeah.
And then what's going on? Maybe Aquano is our pick. And then, you know, that just throws the draft completely off. Right. And you guys said that Garrett Wilson was the only wide receiver they were going to take. So if Atlanta goes Wilson instead of London, it's a completely different draft. So I think that things are just starting to fall in place. The way that things always seem to just fall right to those good teams like the Steelers, the Ravens, and even the Giants sometimes. I think Evan Neal has one of the highest floors in this entire draft. I feel like at worst, he's going to be an average right tackle. His ceiling, he's going to be a franchise left tackle, or for the Giants, a franchise right tackle. But I think that the Jets are, like, whenever you start to move properly, I think things start to fall in your favor. And I think that that's where the Jets are right now.
So I'll say this about JJ before we move on. He once said, "I'm vicious, I'm physical, I'll be on you the entire game." That sounds like all gas, no break to me.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
I got one last question just before we transition. What do you think you can attribute to his fall? Because I was reading like somewhere, like we are all very critical of the Jets beat writers, but I was reading somewhere to the effect, you know, with him is that there was a couple of red flags. Do you think there was any potential chance where it was like he just felt like the Jets were the spot for him, and maybe, you know, I'm not saying have a bad interview, but maybe kind of, you know, shifted a little bit, because it's pretty odd that he got past Dallas. I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't know how he got past Dallas, but when he did, I just knew. I think we all knew that it was coming. I don't know.
Well, Dallas needs to start replenishing that O-line. They have to protect their investment. I thought that Tyler Smith was a bit of a reach, but he has a high, you know, his potential is really huge. I'm going to be honest with you, man. I don't know if NFL teams, I think this is kind of where, remember Matt, I said the same thing because TK started falling in love with him. I said that I see him as an end of the first round guy. Now, granted, he had a tremendous Senior Bowl week. He came and he did what he was supposed to do in the draft, but this is kind of where I saw Jermaine Johnson going. Now, I would have been happy with him at 10, but this is kind of where he was going. And if he had some bad interviews and just, you know, a couple of other things, and he's also older. I personally don't care about the older thing. He's only 23. So, I mean, you talk about that with the COVID year, and he had to go to the junior college route. I don't think that's that big of a deal. But yeah, I heard the same things as you. I'm not gonna lie to you. His hips are a little tight, not incredibly tight. And like you said, he has trouble stringing together moves. That's like the first thing I noticed about him. So I think that this happens. You know, like there's always some guys that you think are going to go on the team that get bumped down. And then with all the receiver stuff happening, so
I think we could just chalk it up to JD recognizing there's going to be a run on receivers with the teams behind him at after 10. So he probably knew. I'll give him that credit where he probably knew that there was going to be a run on the receivers. So he had to take the receiver and knew that would push players down the board. And if Jermaine made it down that far, you do what you got to do. So,
yeah,
you
know. Yeah. I mean, listen,
good GM problems.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a good question, Matt, but I don't know. I always thought Jermaine Johnson was going to be picked in the 20s. And when people started telling me, you know, Connor Hughes saying fourth overall, don't be surprised. I was like, come on, man, let's.
Oh, Connor Hughes got fed a whole bunch of horse crap the whole draft season. So,
yeah, you know. Yeah. And I mean, listen, and rightfully so. It's all right, though. Hopefully he'll bounce back. But you already know how I feel about the Jets beat. So, all right. So that caps the first round. Jets get three day one starters. And this entire time, we kept saying that the Jets need to get at minimum three day one starters. So not only did they secure three day one starters at premium positions, soon we're going to have to put wide receiver as a premium position. The Jets do something. They kind of go against the grain. They take Breece Hall with their fourth pick. And there were rumors that the Jets were trying to trade back into the first round because they thought Breece was going to go. So the Jets had Breece Hall as their 18th rated player. So the Jets trade up, Jets trade up from 38. They give up a fifth rounder to move up two spots, and they take the number one running back, arguably the number one running back in the draft. Most people had him as number one. I had Kenneth Walker. I believe, Matt, you had Kenneth Walker as well, too, but we said that they were both close. It was just kind of a preference type of deal.
It was a scheme fit.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect scheme fit. And I'm telling you right now, this gave me Jonathan Taylor and Nick Chubb feels all day. I love the player. This guy scored a touchdown, I believe, in what was it, 24 straight games?
He hasn't not scored a touchdown since 2019.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. I think Breece Hall is a day one bell cow starter. I think that he and Michael Carter, Michael Carter was my favorite player in the draft last year. But seeing how he got banged up twice once he started to take the boatload of the carries, I knew that the Jets were going to get somebody to compliment him. And just with this, you just want to be able to keep running the ball and wear these teams down. So I love the Breece Hall pick. 5'11", 217, runs the ball hard as hell. He's extremely patient. He's a one cut and go guy. He can score from anywhere on the field. And he's also an option out of the backfield. I think that he is going to be Zach Wilson's best friend. And I think behind this offensive line, if they all remain healthy, we could see a 1,100-yard rookie campaign from Breece Hall with Michael Carter with 800 yards behind that. And I just absolutely love this pick. This might be the overall, from a value standpoint, an immediate return. We're going to be able to see an immediate return from Breece Hall. So I absolutely love the pick, Matt. What do you have?
I mean, listen, we were clamoring, I think, for double dipping on wide receiver. We were. I mean, we were hoping to get a wide receiver in the first round, and then we were hoping to get a Pickens or a Watson. There they are staring you in the face. However, prior to the first round, before the Bills took Kyer Elam, which is a great pick, mind you, they were rumored to love Breece Hall. So much so that they were potentially going to move up into the first round. Move up into the second round to get him when they realized he wasn't, you know, he was going to be there. I've seen the live video of Bills fans going absolutely crazy over this. How many years, and again, we understand that running back is a devalued position. We do. We get it. It's a depreciating asset from the second you draft them to the second they're gone. And we understand you can find good players in undrafted, later rounds, Elijah Mitchell being a six-round pick, so on and so forth. But when you have a chance to get arguably, I wouldn't say arguably with Breece, but the best player at three positions, meaning Garrett Wilson was universally, for the most part, seen as wide receiver one or two. Sauce Gardner, cornerback one or two. Breece Hall, running back one or two. Or I guess Breece Hall really won. And Jermaine was, you know, some people had him edge one, two, three, whatever you want to do. When you can do that, when you have a chance to do that, you do it. Now, we all know the analytic nerds at PFF love to be critical of, you know, the running back position and whatever. And I've seen some videos of, I forget his name, I think George at George PFF, whatever, being uber critical. If the biggest problem you can find with this draft is that the Jets moved up two picks, sacrificing a fifth round pick, where fifth round picks normally don't hit. They really don't hit. The hit rate on fifth, sixth, and seventh round picks is really low. So you sacrifice a fifth round pick to move up two spots with your arch rival, quote unquote, the Giants, to secure RB1 and take him away potentially from not only the Texans at 37, but potentially the Bills trying to move up to that pick. You just do it and don't turn back. I mean, now realistically, what do? You just pretty much bought Michael Carter an extra couple of years of time when it comes to, you know, his legs, because now you got two guys that easily, I think, could carry the load in the backfield. So to your point also, how many years have we seen running backs go at the top of the second round that easily, after seeing what they did in their rookie campaign, could have went in the first round, could have went in the top half of the first round? Jonathan Taylor, Nick Chubb being two of them, like you said. This, again, gives you that same vibe. I mean, he has the breakaway speed, ran a 4.38, hasn't not scored a touchdown since 2019. And honestly, he's going to be splitting carries most likely with Michael Carter in a scheme that, like we said earlier, is that you said all the coaches went to Joe Douglas and said, this is what I need. This is what I need. This just screams another pick that it's just LaFleur was like, did you see LaFleur smile on the call when they made the call to Breece? Biggest smile I've ever seen in my life from anyone. I mean, Jermaine was huge. Breece was equally as huge. So, listen, from a scheme side of things, one-cut guy can make people miss, has great underrated hands. I mean, what more can you ask for? Now you got two backs that can do that? I mean, this has really given me that Thomas Jones, Leon Washington type vibe. Maybe Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams in Carolina.
That's good.
What the vibes are giving me. And I'm just I don't know how anyone could be critical of this pick. Giving up a fifth rounder when the hit rate is so low on fifth rounders is it's a moot point to me.
He's perfect for this team.
Yeah, TK, before you give your take, I think that another thing too, people really need to stop with the no running backs in the first round. Because if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you can take Clyde Edwards-Helaire. If you're in the back end, you can take a running back in the 20s, especially if you have let's say that your team had a quarterback injury, and that's why you guys are picking, you know, really high. And when your quarterback comes back, you already know that this running back is going to give you a lot of value. Not every running back is the same. Like, for some reason, we just got it, you know, mixed up because the Giants took Saquon number two overall. He wasn't supposed to go number two overall. But in this situation right here, as your fourth pick, I don't understand how people are saying that they traded up. They gave up a fifth round pick. How many fifth rounders do we know that never pan out into anything? What are the percentages of a fifth round pick turning into some materializing into something, and Breece Hall coming in and being a productive running back? I'll take my odds with Breece Hall.
Yep.
But people need to just stop this. He was their fourth. He was their fourth pick, and oh, guess what? He was their 18th rated player. So the Jets got four of their top 20 rated players in their first four picks, and they didn't have to trade anybody. And the Jets get this. The Jets even I heard this, and I'm not sure how true it is from Connor Hughes. So shout out to Connor. I heard that the Jets were offering whoever was picking 29th. It wasn't New England. I think it was after New England. I think the Jets offered the rest of their draft to move up for Breece Hall. So they were going to be okay just bringing in four players because this draft was more about quality over quantity. So I think that when you put all those variables together, this is a home run pick. And anybody who's you know, downplaying this pick just really doesn't understand, because this helps, again, another player that does tremendous wonders for the offense. Now this makes Zach's life easier. How many times did we see second and long and third and long, and then after two runs up the middle, nothing materializes, and then Zach has to play hero ball? This is going to help the team tremendously.
You said this is a home run pick. A home run pick for a home run hitter. You're looking at the footage now, but what this footage doesn't show is he had five touchdowns runs of 75 yards or more in his career. He scored in 20, broke the record, 25 straight games, scoring a touchdown. And between him and Micah Carter, basically, to Matt's point, interchanging them would be seamless. We won't have that drop off of Ty Johnson dropping passes, speaking of drop off. And you know, I gave Tevin Coleman grief. He was okay, but this kid is way better than Tevin Coleman. So this is an excellent pick, great value. You got him in the second round. Things I do like about him, he's tough. He showed he can carry a workhorse load, but you won't need him to because you have Micah Carter.
Yep.
And he's good. He's actually a lot better than Micah Carter in pass protection. So he can be a three down back, and they both can catch. He had 36 catches last year. So listen, man, anybody mad at this is an idiot, period. I mean, there's nothing else I can say. So home run pick for home run hitter. Once again, Joe Douglas, he did his thing. I really did enjoy this pick, man. And, like you said, Amari, this is going to make Zach's life a lot easier because he has, you know, the real threat and, you know, somebody he can check down to, somebody who can make something out of nothing and get that tough yard. So I love it, man. We got four players, all four arguably was the best player in their position. You can make argument for all four of them.
Yeah.
And that's rare.
It's just preference at this point. So I think that the Jets got four day one starters. I think all these guys in some capacity, well, you already know Garrett Wilson's probably going to slide in as the Z. Sauce, CB1. Jermaine is going to be a rotational guy. And RB1 right here. So they did better than what we said.
Now, speaking of arguing, this pick is really where all the infighting amongst the Jets fans started. Like crazy. Now, many considered him to be the best tight end in the draft as well.
Absolutely.
And that's crazy. Once again, that's crazy. So now you're looking at five players, and one of them you got in the third round. A lot of people believe he went too high, but man, I think
people think that he went too high. He went 101.
He went where he was supposed to go. Listen, I mean,
I've argued with plenty of people who felt that Ruckert went entirely too high.
Name drop him.
That's you know, sorry to jump all over your lead in, but I had 101 to get a tight end that everyone thinks was underutilized at Ohio State. He needs to refine some of his blocking, but he's a willing blocker. He sticks his face mask in there. I don't know. They coached him at the Senior Bowl. I don't know. 101 is, I thought that was tremendous value for Jeremy Ruckert.
I agree. Tremendous value for somebody who was underutilized, overshadowed because of Wilson, because of Olave. And, dog, I did the write-up, Big Dreams and Big Games and Red Zone Nightmares. He will be that red zone nightmare. May not be this year, but year two, three, he is going to be tough to contain. And, you know, we talked about this maybe last week before. You got him, Uzama, and you got Conklin.
Conklin.
That 13 personnel in the red zone, it's going to be a problem.
They could even bust out 23 personnel, two backs, three tight ends.
23, and we won't bat an eye.
Yeah.
So, like, I really love this pick, man. And the story itself, hometown kid, grew up a Jets fan, and to see the way his daddy, reacted, man. You know, that's some real Hollywood type shit. I hope he gives us that Hollywood ending where he just blows the top off the game. So what you got, Matt?
I think that's the type of thing too, like going to your home team, the team you rooted for. I mean, you see his dad jumping up and down when he puts the hat on and stuff like that. That's the type of thing that motivates players sometimes, young men especially. It's like you kind of don't want to disappoint. So it's like I this was probably my favorite pick in the draft. I mean, I can't count on one, you know, I can't even count on two hands and my toes how many mock drafts I did where I had Rucker in the third or fourth round. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just, it's a homecoming. I'm glad the pick was made. And like you said, I mean, just getting to the X and O things, guy has a less than 2% drop rate in his career. Granted, he wasn't targeted a lot, but he doesn't drop the ball. He very rarely, I could vividly remember one-handed catch after one-handed catch against Alabama in the title game. He just doesn't drop the ball. And to Amari's point, he's a willing blocker. Now, does it need some refinement? Yeah, absolutely. But when you look at him on the field, he will put his nose in there and he'll block. And honestly, I think that's kind of a common theme among the two other tight ends we brought in too. They'll block. Maybe they're not great at it, but they'll put their nose in there. And I think a large part of our problem last year was our tight ends. When you bring them in on that 12 personnel and you run, an ISO or an outside zone run play, tight ends just getting torched. They don't care. I mean, how many times did we see Daniel Brown or Croft or one of them get worked? So it's like, you know, to me, it's just, it's a home run pick. I mean, if you get anything from him, you know, above, I don't know, 20 receptions or so, it's a win. And then you just hope for, tight ends usually take, you know, a couple years to get acclimated. So we can see a major leap in a couple years. But honestly, I don't even think that I don't know how to put it. I don't think that we've seen the best of him yet. And I think we would all agree that we might be pleasantly surprised come the start of the year in what he's doing. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we start reading reports about him making some unbelievable catches in practice, looking solid in the preseason games, going against, you know, quote unquote, lesser competition, so to speak. So I think this was a home run pick. I mean, what was I watching? I think I was watching Rich Eisen today, and he was asking him about the Rucker pick. And apparently when Rucker went to the Senior Bowl, I know he didn't play in the game, but when he saw Joe Douglas on the field, he ran up to him telling him how much of a Jets fan he is and how he's so excited to be working with them and stuff like that. And like Ron Middleton or whatever was like, dude, this is my guy. Right outside of McBride being the dog, Rucker was his guy. So, I mean, it's a great story. And my last point I just want to bring up is that people were being critical because their opinion was we didn't need a tight end. So you don't pick it. You know what I mean? You didn't need another tight end because of what you did in free agency. And to that point, I think that's a stupid logic because, you know, you can make the argument we didn't really need a running back, but we got the best one. You can make the argument that we didn't need a tight end, but we got what a lot of people thought was the best one, the most complete tight end. So it's like that argument to me is just, it's coming from a senseless place where it's like when you're a team like we've been in 20, I mean, we can go back and look at 2017's roster. When you're a team that's that devoid of talent, to bring in a talented player like that who is arguably one of the best at his position, you just don't question it. There's no reason to question it. Same way you don't question the Breece Hall pick. So I kind of took exception to that, but the idea we don't need another tight end is ridiculous to me because especially when you look at those structures of the contracts we gave out to the other two tight ends, a lot of it is like you can cut them in a year and there's no real cap ramifications there. So, you know, we'll see.
I don't have to really add anything. All I have to say is Ryan Griffin, Trayvon Wesco, Tyler Croft, Chris Herndon, Kenny Aboah, Daniel Brown. The Jets fans don't even know what a good tight end looks like. The last good tight end the Jets had was either Kellen Winslow or Dustin Keller. The Jets fans don't even know what a good tight end is. That's why y'all got to stop arguing with Jets fans. And it's just, listen, Jeremy Ruckert was my tight end number one from the outset. Number one is because Lynn, I basically spent, you know, my teenage years until adulthood in Bayshore, Long Island. So stand up, throw the L's up, all that good stuff. Hometown kid, plays his ass off, blocks his ass off. That's what I truly love. But this is how good teams go. You got CJ Uzama. CJ Uzama is 29, right? He'll be 30 soon.
Yeah.
He's a willing blocker. He's had some success. He's had a slow build up to his success. Tyler Conklin, another underutilized guy that they brought in. And this is what variation is. Honestly, I feel like Ruckert is a little, he's a bit of both. He's going to give you some blocking. He's going to give you some receiving. And he's also going to be able to play that move tight end H-back role too. I know that he's bigger than Kyle Juszczyk, but like when we said the 13 personnel, you can put him in motion. He can be in the backfield. He can be your lead blocker. I think that he's going to give you a lot of versatility. And that's just what it's about. You have to have talent. It doesn't matter if you have it. Like, look, did the Browns need Harrison Bryant when they already had Austin Hooper and David Njoku? No, but they got him. And guess what? Now you let Austin Hooper go, you free up some of that money, and now you can go get whatever other position and fill whatever hole that you need. You have to keep filling the pipeline, all right? And honestly, after you get your edge rusher, your corner, your receiver, and your running back, what other spots did you really need? You're going to take another linebacker? You don't really need that. You can find a linebacker anywhere. Where the hell did they find Quincy Williams from? And he was arguably the biggest – and he was the brightest spot on the defense certainly.
Yep.
So you don't really need that. They already have Naz and they already have Sherwood. So they think that those guys are going to come in. They brought in a few undrafted free agents to play linebacker. Guys can come in and play linebacker. And when your defensive line is dominating and when your corners are actually covering people, you can hide a linebacker or two. You can do that. So I don't know. I think I pick 101. I think Jeremy Ruckert is tremendous value. And I think honestly, CJ Uzama, this might only be a one at max 2-year deal. Definitely, I don't know about year two, but definitely year three. Jeremy Ruckert is going to be tight end one, and he's arguably just going to dominate the seams. Hopefully, I feel fully at least the next 6 to 8 years. And I think that you look at all these picks now. Zach is going to have an option. I think that there's always going to be a check down. Now he has to hit those checkdowns, but right. He's going to have a running back check down. He's going to have a tight end check down, and now he has two receivers that win extremely fast. And Wilson and more, and he's going to have a veteran presence. And if you look at all of Zach's receiving core, I mean, I'm just going to include the running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers. It looks like a damn AAU team, and Zach is the point guard. So let's go.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. I love this pick. Now you said something real interesting. You said you got to keep filling that pipeline, and that is exactly what this pick right here was. Number fourth round pick, Mr. Max Mitchell out of Louisiana. Was it Louisiana Tech?
Yeah, Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah, Louisiana Lafayette.
Go big, Raging big Cajun. Dude,
6'6", 307 pounds. He's developmental, but because you have Fant, and I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with that. We all think he's going to get that extension, but because you have him and you got Becton, you got time to develop this guy, to beat out the Adogas and the McDermotts and all of those, and be that tackle that you need. And this guy is versatile. You know, Joe likes versatility. He can play tackle. He can play guard. So you look at, you know, what you got with him, and again, solid pick by Joe in the fourth round, and you keep adding talent. This roster has went from basically being devoid of talent to having a surplus in key areas. Now, offensive line ain't one of them. We can still add to it. But my point is, like you said, you keep filling that pipeline, and you develop guys, and you see what happens. And I think this will be, you know, a good pick. Give him a year or two to get acclimated to the NFL, to faster, stronger players, and get faster and stronger himself. And, you know, we might have a something with him. And if not, he was a fourth-round pick after you got your wide receiver, your defensive end, your cornerback, your running back, all premier positions. So, good pick by Joe.
Listen, I mean, I know I'm critical sometimes of PFF when it comes to their grading because I don't, you know, necessarily agree with it or the way they value players and so on and so forth. But he had the highest run blocking grade in college football last year. He did. And he I mean, for whatever that's worth, that's pretty impressive to me, regardless of how they calculate that or whatnot. Listen, man, he's a swing tackle who has versatility, that can play in every position across the offensive line. His biggest issue last year was his ability, his strength. So that's one of those things. Like, technique can be taught, all this stuff can be taught. Strength cannot can't be taught, but it can be built. So get in there, get with a professional, you know, trainer. Get in the weight room, bust your ass, and we could have something here. I mean, honestly, and I don't think I'm being a homer in saying this. I mean, there was a couple of games where McDermott and Edoga came in and they were serviceable against Tampa Bay, right? They came in. Edoga had a couple of reps, serviceable. That's what you're looking for in these picks. And if Max Mitchell is the player that PFF seems to think he is and who we think he could potentially develop into, he could be a potential starting right tackle. I mean, that's what you hope for when you draft a fourth rounder, but at worst, he can come in and he could be serviceable. And if you tell me that he has more potential than, you know, McDermott or Edoga and in a couple of years, maybe next year, who knows? When the Fant stuff works out, he can potentially slot in at that right tackle position and be a competent, you know, league average player. That's all you could ask for. And honestly, I think this is just one of those picks where you knew Joe Douglas was going to get his lineman somewhere. It was just a matter of where. And he ended up getting a guy that honestly, again, we're not used to the praise, but a lot of people seem to think the pick was a good pick, and maybe he could have snuck into that third round. So overall, I don't think there's any reason to really nitpick this. At all.
Again, this is how you build teams. You have to forecast for the future. George Fant's best season as a pro is basically less than what Mekhi Becton did his rookie year. And we can arguably say that. And another thing that we've been saying too, and I've been saying this too, and that's why I would have been okay had the draft, if they would have went edge, left tackle or tackle, I would have been fine with that because, again, I've been saying this entire time, the Jets are one injury away from Connor Turnstile McDermott protecting Zach's blindside. Chuma Edoga, who should have been a guard since he was in the NFL, still is playing tackle. But I think best case scenario for Max Mitchell is going to be he's the right tackle. Fant moves on. Mekhi Becton gets his shit together. He's the left tackle, and then Mitchell works into being the right tackle. I think all teams now, just like all teams are going to have three receivers, all teams have three corners, teams have two running backs, teams are going to start to have three tackles because you got fresh edges coming from the sidelines, super fresh. Look at the Jets. The Jets are what? Right now, the Jets have about 13 D linemen. I could rattle off 10. The Jets need better depth. And that's the big thing with this team. Even those great back-to-back AFC championships. Those great Jets teams, they had no depth. They were very top heavy. one injury away, and you were and you were just basically getting somebody that should be a practice squad player playing meaningful snaps. So I don't expect Matt Mitchell to come in and be a starter. I think he's probably a developmental guy. Even next year might be a little too soon, but hey, you never know. Maybe he puts on another 20 pounds and he gets, you know, he increases his functional strength, and maybe he's a good right tackle. But again, I think that he's a prototypical right tackle. He's a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker right now. He just needs to get stronger. I did see people saying that he has some short arms, so he's going to have to get over that as well too. But I mean, there have been guys who have shorter arms than him, and they turn out okay. So I'm not really worried about that. I think best case scenario for Max Mitchell in year three, he's just starting right tackle. And these are the type of fourth round picks that you like to see. I mean, you look at his fourth round picks in 2020, they didn't really pan out. His last two fourth rounders and the two from this year, he knows what he's doing in the fourth round. So I think that at worst, he's a better option at tackle. And now you look at the Jets' depth piece, and this is just from a depth standpoint from the offensive line. You got Dan Feeney as a good backup center because Feeney played well. And you already know I will never miss an opportunity to shit on Dan Feeney. He played very well as a backup center. You got Greg Van Roten, who probably – Greg Van Roten should not be an NFL starter.
Yes.
Listen. He was starting last year. Now he's a backup. So that's good depth, right? We can agree that that's good depth. We don't like GVR, but he's good depth. We can agree there. All right. I would love for Adoga to take his spot. Now you have McDermott. Now you have Adoga, and now you have Max Mitchell. And I think that some of the offensive lines that we were running out, those guys would have been starters in the past. So now these guys are depth pieces, and I think that everybody has to get on board with that.
Yeah. Now, you talk depth, you know, we were talking about fourth round and a depth piece leads us to our next player. So, Mr. Michael Clemens, defensive end, Texas A&M. Now, it seems like every time Joe drafts, he always finds an older player. And this year is no different. Clemens will be 25, if he isn't already 25.
He's 24. He's already 24. Yeah. I don't know when he'll
Okay, he'll be 25 at the start of the season. He's had, you know, some trouble. It's, you know, I don't care about weed. It is what it is. But you know, he did run, you know, foul of the law and miss some games and things of that nature. But dude has talent. And I wouldn't be surprised if he makes the final 53. And you know, add to that rotation, like you talked about, we already got, what, 13, 14, however many, you know, defensive linemen. I think he, you know, can add to that and you know, add value to the team. He won't be a star, but I think he has the talent and the skill set to make a play or two. And I wouldn't be shocked if he did make the final 53.
I mean, he's got the talent. He's got the size. He's got the length. He played in a difficult SEC. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he had the second highest pressure rate in the SEC. So, I mean, the talent's there. I mean, you know, these are the type of picks, like Amari said, that you're glad to make because you can potentially find something if you have the ability to develop the player. I mean, obviously the off-field stuff, just stay out of trouble and hopefully you'll be good. But the on-field stuff, he has the talent. He can push the pocket. He needs to develop some moves, but that can be taught. So, I mean, if he's playing in the SEC, where we give the SEC a lot of credit for being one of the most, you know, difficult conferences to play in, but if he's getting pressure rates against, you know, the likes of, I'm sure Texas A&M played Evan Neal. I'm sure, you know, Darren Kennard at Kentucky and so on. So, listen, if you can produce in the SEC, I don't know what his sack numbers were. I'm pretty sure he had a pretty good amount of sacks in the SEC.
He came on late.
Yeah, something I think about 13 sacks in his final 17 games. So he came on pretty late, but finish your point.
Yeah, no, but if you can, these are the type of players, like you said, you can find and you can develop and you can be okay with the pick. So again, I'll go back to what I was saying when we were talking about Breece Hall. If this is where us as Jet fans, and not the media, because the media has been singing our praises. If this is where us as Jet fans draw the line in the sand, or like this is where the draft went south, then you had a good draft because. you really gotta try hard to find something wrong with the draft. So again, I got no beef with this pick. I think it's a tremendous value pick. Some people had third round grades on him, so I mean, take that for what you will. But overall, I mean,
look at that effort.
I mean, he makes an effort. Just stay out of trouble, and I'm sure he'll be developed accordingly. But we do have a lot of depth at that position.
You guys want to know the difference between John Idzik and Mike Maccagnan and Joe Douglas? They would have drafted a safety, a D tackle, and then gave us this edge rusher, and then been trying to prop him up as he's going to be the premier edge guy. Michael Clemens is a rotational rusher. He's definitely going to make the 53 because Jabari Zuniga is not going to make it. He's definitely going to make it. Do you guys remember when Dylan Donahue, they were trying to prop him up as the pass rusher that the Jets were missing? Do you remember Ja'Kai Polite? Do y'all remember?
Not really, because
exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So Michael Clemens is 6'5", 270. Now, one thing I will say, I'll start off with what he does good. Tremendous motor, has really good prototypical length. He's your 4'3 end through and through, 6'5", 270. He's pretty athletic, uses his hands decently. As you can see, he knows he has long arms, so he has a really good wrong arm. Doesn't have the explosiveness that you really love. He's not going to really bend, but I think in passing situations, and he's big enough that you could kick him inside. He's tight-hipped, as you can see, because even his spin moves kind of looks tight-hipped. But as a designated pass rusher, he can win with a bull rush. I think that he doesn't have to have a wide array of moves right now. I think he's just going to be like Jermaine Johnson. Hey, listen, get in there, go get the pass rusher. He's going to be somebody that you could line up and play that Justin Tuck role. I see him more as the Justin Tuck role, as a Justin Tuck, than somebody where some people comped JJ as Justin Tuck. I didn't see that. I think Michael Clemens is more of a Justin Tuck than Jermaine Johnson. And another thing that this is one of my favorite picks is because what were the Jets trying to do? They've changed over this locker room completely. I think there's only one starter left from 2019. And now, listen, so what's a Joe Douglas prospect look like? He's all about football. He's a team captain, and he's a high character locker room guy, right? So now that you've filled your locker room with all these high character guys, now you can take a chance on somebody like a Michael Clemens. So that means, guess what, Matt? That means that the culture's starting to change. And now that Joe Douglas knows that he has enough good guys in his locker room to where he can get somebody like a Michael Clemens, and he's going to come in and hopefully start to make the right decisions, because he's around a bunch of people. He's around CJ Mosley. He's around Carl Lawson. He's around Jermaine Johnson. So you're not going to be getting in trouble. And me, I don't consider weed. I don't consider weed. I don't think anyone does
except the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not even going to vilify a kid, because that's what he is. He's still a kid at 24. A young man. And I'm not going to vilify a young man in college for smoking a little bit of weed, because maybe he has anxiety. Maybe he has some aches and pains. And that's just a non-factor to me. But you just have to be a little bit smarter. Getting arrested twice in a 2 to 3 month span just isn't smart. But now hopefully he can, you know, somebody takes him under his wing and he produces. And Matt, I mean, listen, one of my freezing cold takes is that Michael Clemens is going to have more sacks than Jermaine Johnson. And that has nothing to do with JJ. It's just in certain situations, I feel like he's going to be one of those guys that gets all those hustle sacks. And I think that he's going to be a part of the rotation. And now you can start to, you know, like just think about the edge rush talent that they have now. This is just edge guys. So you got JFM, Carl Lawson coming back from injury. You had, it was a gun charge. So, all right. So maybe, you know, I personally, I'll be honest, I didn't look up, you know, what he was arrested for, but I know that they did their research. So if they feel comfortable with it, then it's usually fine. I mean, honestly, the only thing that I truly have a problem with is if it's like, you know, a murder or if it's domestic violence. Other than that, I feel like people make mistakes and everyone deserves a second chance. But so Jermaine Johnson, Carl Lawson, Bryce Huff, John Franklin Myers, Michael Clemens, Jacob Martin. That's six decent edge rushers that the Jets, that, I mean, listen, it's just going to be a machine gun of edge. Yeah, so, and we didn't even get into the interior guys, so it's just off the top of my head, TK, I named six edge rushers that the Jets are going to be able to have in a rotation. It's just really going to be fun to watch, so.
I mean, yeah. The line is our deepest part of the team now. And you know, you're getting lost and back. You're able to move JFM around. Like, there's so much versatility with this line now. You got Solomon Thomas in the fold. You know, they brought Vinnie Curry back because his blood disorder situation is fixed. So it's like you got a great mixture of accomplished veterans, young guys with experience, and new guys. So, and then you got a coach who defense is his forte. So I know Ulbrich has got to be, you know, licking his chops and rubbing his hands like Birdman, you know, overseeing like the players that he has. And we have a lot to be excited about, a lot. And hopefully it translates to wins. I was talking to somebody yesterday at work, and I told him, I was like, man, he asked me about Zach and said, do you think Zach is going to make this huge leap and be like this Pro Bowl caliber quarterback this year? And I said, well, with the weapons that he has, if he's just slightly above average, we can win 9-10 games. He doesn't have to be a world beater. Give me Alex Smith this year, and damn it, we in the playoffs.
Yeah. Give me Alex Smith this year, and then give me Derek Carr in, you know, 2 years.
If Zach turns into Derek Carr, I wouldn't be mad.
If Zach turns into Derek Carr with this team, they'll be in the AFC Championship by year three. And a lot of people sleep on Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr, you think about it, there's been a lot of times where Derek Carr has made something out of nothing.
Especially that whole John Gruden, Mike Mayock fiasco, and still making the playoffs with an interim head coach. Yeah. So,
if Derek Carr, let me ask you a good question. If Derek Carr was on this team right now, what would your expectations be?
Minimum wild card.
Minimum? Yeah, I was about to say they're making a division. I think that they'd stand, go toe to toe with the Bills.
Yeah. With Derek Carr.
If you draw Derek Carr on this team with this, you know, this potential of this running game and the weapons, I don't know. But I think the Jets are in a good spot right now. And the beauty of all of this is that everybody keeps saying now Zach Wilson doesn't have any excuses, blah, blah, blah. He's still going to be a young QB. He's going to be in year two. He's still going to make mistakes. I think now the Jets have taken – the Jets don't have – they've built everything up enough around him to the point where he doesn't feel like he has to play hero ball. And I think that's where Zach started to get in trouble. Now, we've – as Jets fans, we know we've always seen towards the end of the year when they're not playing for anything, these guys – they play well. We thought Sam, towards the end of his rookie year when he came back from injury, he played well. Now let's just hope that Zach can take that next step. And I think that he will, because I just think Mike LaForest is going to put him in positions to succeed. And I think Mike in the box, LaFleur, is a different guy.
I guess I got one more question. I'm not sure how to answer it or maybe ask it. So looking back, like, obviously we all understand hindsight's 2020, right? We all know you can look back, and we universally, as Jets fans, we praise their last draft class. We're praising this draft class, except, you know, that's more everyone included. What do you think is the biggest improvement from Joe Douglas's first draft to his 19 or till his last year's draft to this year's class? Like, what do you think changed? Did he just get better at it? Did he do it better? Like, cause like, I just feel like us as a podcast and us three individually have just kind of been in line with him for the most part for the last 2 years. So what do you think was that shift, and why are we so in line with his thought process?
Because it makes sense. We see what the offense is. We see what the defense is, and we know, I think we're getting a good understanding of what a Jet looks like a Jets player looks like. We know that your corners, we want you to be tough. We want you to be able to play zone, but also be able to play man when you want to. DJ Reed and Ahmad Gardner. For your D tackles, we want you to be able to rush upfield, be able to play the run, but we really want you to pin your ears back and get after the quarterback. Quinnen Williams, Sheldon Rankins, Jonathan Franklin Myers. Your edges, they want them to be able to rush upfield. They don't necessarily have to be the biggest guys. So, I love that they don't try to force their scheme onto anybody, because you look at Bryce Huff. Bryce Huff is a different type. Bryce Huff and Carl Lawson are different type of edges. than Michael Clemens and Jermaine Johnson. So, you know, it's different flavors, and it all makes sense. And honestly, they're just smart football people. I feel like there's just football people in the building now that are making the decisions, and the owner's staying out of it, and they're just making good football decisions. You're not supposed to take safeties top 10 if you have glaring holes all over your team. So I don't think, you know, like, I mean, if we were Ravens fans, we would be lockstepping with the Ravens, right? It's not that hard. If you understand football, you understand how to win games. And then guess what? You can also look at other teams and how they build it.
Yeah,
it's really not that hard when you get football people in there, because now all of a sudden, hey, now the Bengals all of a sudden know how to draft and they know how to build a team. And it also helps when you have a good QB too. But I just think that they have football people in it. So Damien said they forced their scheme onto Mims. That's not fair, because Mims was here before this group got in. So Mims fit exactly what Adam Gase wanted to do. He wanted a straight line X receiver that caught jump ball. So they didn't force it onto Mims. They inherited Mims, and they're trying to get him to be, you know, they're trying to get him to fit their mold. And I think that Mims is actually going to have a better season. If anything, he's probably just going to be trade bait.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I think I can chalk up his first draft more to him trying to lay a foundation in spite of a coach that he doesn't want. So you have a conflict of ideas, right? You have a GM with a vision, then you have a head coach that he knew he wasn't going to be there long term. He knew he wasn't the guy after the prior year. That's how you end up with those picks. So it's like, I feel like that's kind of what you kind of chalk it up to. And honestly, I don't know about you, but the Mims thing, all the reports we're reading, I won't be fooled again, but I do think Mims potentially could have, I don't want to say a significant impact, because I think the wide receiver room is deeper than it's been. But I think that we could see him at least take a step, and maybe he gained some value back that he lost. And Becton seems to be a completely motivated guy. I was listening to Douglas interviews. I was listening to Sala interviews. He's rehabbing with Duke Manyweather, who is renowned for his work with the offensive linemen. So, listen, all signs point up, and I'm just so glad that we are, as a podcast, are in lockstep with the GM, and the GM is doing the right thing. Like you said, you don't draft a safety if you got holes at premium positions. You just don't do it. We all knew he wasn't going to do it, but some people were convinced. So I'm just happy that we're in lockstep with the GM. And honestly, I think that this is the first time in a while that we can, again, we had an episode a year ago called Cautious Optimism. I think we can cautiously be optimistic again. But at least, you know, we can say that we have talent on the roster now, irregardless. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. That's you know, it's a good time to be a Jets fan for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, and I think honestly, we're not. I think our expectations are realistic. We just want to, you know, we want the team to be playing meaningful games in November and December. Just be in the hunt. Like when the graphic comes up, just be in the hunt. You know, just showing year over year improvement. We're not asking for a lot. And it's really remarkable to see, because the Jets aren't the least talented team in the league anymore. And I think 2018 and 19, they were trotting out some horrible, horrible teams. And I think Joe Douglas has done a tremendous job. I think he's turned over, I think it's something crazy, like 80 to 85% of this roster, right? When you look at it.
Something like that. And then he maintains his draft picks. All his draft picks are still on the roster, with the exception, I think, of what, one or two?
Yeah, James Morgan and a couple other guys or something. Yeah, something like that, which is okay.
Which is a sign of a GM that wants his guys to pan out. And I don't think he's to the point where he's adamant that they pan out. Like, if they don't pan out, I don't foresee him being like, we're going to make it, we're going to force him to work. But I think, you know, when you draft well, you don't really, that's not a question you got to really worry about anymore. Is how these players are going to pan out. So it's an exciting time. And I was listening to the interviews from Douglas, and the guy's got a sense of humor too. So
I know I'm not going to lie. I did love that. So he's crushing it right now. He deserves his praise too. He worked his ass off. The entire scouting department worked their ass off. So I think this is a time for Jets fans to be optimistic. And Jets fans, if you guys are listening out there, if you're watching right now, don't let anybody rain on your parade. Listen, the Jets, Mel Kiper said the Jets don't understand what the draft is about. And now nobody can say that anymore. The Jets understand what the draft is about. The Jets not only understand what the draft is about, they understand how to manipulate up and down the board. And Jets fans should be happy, because you have a GM that understands what he's doing. You have a coach that guys want to play for. And you have assistants that understand what they're doing, and they're bringing everybody's working in conjunction with each other, and this is how it's supposed to feel. So celebrate, but be realistic, and let's go. Hopefully we start getting some positive reports from camp, and we start seeing those videos being published. So there's nothing else that really needs to be said.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. So Tyrus had to run, guys. Listen, we love that you guys are rocking with us. This is an exciting time. And yeah, we're going to be doing more of this. I actually like the live format that we've been doing too. So on behalf of TK, Matt, I'm Amari. This is the Flight Deck Podcast, episode 59, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. Go Jets.